There we are. All right, so please welcome John Joslik for our next presentation.
So I'm with IBM. Today I'm going to talk about a large-scale migration we did for a public school in the U.S. starting in the second quarter of last year. Normally I work internally for IBM and started out 8 years ago doing AFS and DFS file system support. And I learned about Samba as a gateway to those file systems and then gained more experience as we moved from OS2 into Linux and Samba. So today I'll start out talking about the environment the customer had to begin with and how the new solution was architected, how we were planning to migrate the file servers and domains with as little impact as we could to the customer. I'll talk about the performance issues we encountered during testing and during the migration, and then some of the lessons we learned about architecture. I was brought into this project after the architecture was completed, and we knew from the beginning that there were going to be some serious concerns with the number of users we had in the Samba domains. So, start with the notes that I put in the abstract were wrong on the size, because I did it before I went back to look at my documentation. There are actually about 70,000 user and computer accounts and more data than's listed. So the customer had three NT domains, and NT was out of support, and so they needed to get off of there. They had it split into three separate domains. The north and south domains were for students only and were mainly user accounts, and there was a staff domain with about 70,000 or 30,000 accounts, about half and half staff accounts and half computer accounts. And there were two-way trusts between each of these domains. The staff also had, or the administrators also had an Active Directory domain for an application they had that we were not migrating, and it had a two-way trust to each of these three domains. The staff domain also had trusts with two other Active Directory domains maintained by separate IT staff at two of the high schools that we were also not migrating. And then there were also two Windows 2000 Win servers, and we were not migrating those because they wanted to keep the Win's replication, and at the time there was no Samba 4 Win's replicating code we could use. So these are the correct numbers. The customer had about 4 terabytes of data on 36 different NT and Windows 2000 servers. These servers were spread across 10 different locations, mainly secondary schools in converted closets, and there were no IT staff sitting on these sites. So that was a problem. Most of these locations had 100 megabit bandwidth, no redundancy on the network. The power was also poor to some of the schools during the storm season, and they had just standalone UPSs on the floor. So they would often be driving out to fix problems. There were about 30,000 client machines spread over 100 sites. There was a mix of Windows 98, Windows XP, Mac OS 10, and they also had Mac OS 9 and earlier clients. We left those out of the solution because we didn't want to touch them all to install a SMB client on them. And Netatalk wasn't working well at the scale they wanted, with, and also had no Apple support in the distribution. We were trying to stay away from packages outside of support that we could support. So the goals, the customer specifically stated they did not want a Microsoft solution because they were angry about the quote they got back from Microsoft and converting all these users into an Active Directory domain. They wanted to hopefully save money on those license costs and spend it on extra hardware so they could have a more highly or more available solution than what they had. They wanted to improve their administrators' efficiency. As it was, they were manually applying patches to all the servers they had. So they had the 36 file servers and then probably another 14 domain controllers, and they didn't have any automation for patching. And they weren't looking into that on the Linux side either, so they were trying to reduce the number of machines as much as possible. They wanted to keep their admins from having to drive from the administration buildings out to sites when a UPS battery went bad or something. They wanted to harden just two rooms instead of trying to harden the 10 locations they were at to start with. And then since they were consolidating all these services, they wanted to be able to have a quick data disaster recovery plan if they lost one of the sites. So as I said, the customer had already chosen the two locations they were going to go with, and they'd created a new network backbone with dual 1 gigabit links between these, and they'd already rolled that out to some of the high schools when we were starting. The hardware we were going to put in each location was the same, and I'll mention that the customer had other migrations going on at the same time sharing this hardware. So for example, we had an IBM Blade Center that we had three blades in for domain controllers that was specified in the architecture. They had the Blade Center there for application servers, for IBM Director, for their TSM solution. So we were just a small piece of that. The domain controllers, at the time we started, this was in the second quarter of 2005, in May, and so 3014A was the version at the time. Since they have upgraded, but the problems I'm going to mention we hit, you would still hit in the latest version that tested up through 3022. We were using OpenLDAP password backend for Samba, and then a Berkeley database backend for the LDAP data. Again, there was one master OpenLDAP, and Samba would sit on that same box in one data center, and the backup, the replica OpenLDAP would be in the other data center. There were two IBM X445 file servers. Each had four CPUs and 8 gigabytes of RAM. We ran CLI Lifekeeper for high availability within each data center. We were also running, like on the domain controllers, it was 3014A at the time that was configured as a domain member server. For storage, we were using IBM, at the time it was called a Fast T900, for fiber channel attached storage to these two file servers in each data center. And there were two IBM storage units. One was in each data center. So in the new environment, I'm not going to mention the PDCs here too much. I'm mainly focusing on how we could, the file servers where we had the trouble. We had two servers in each data center. In the north, it would be North 1 and North 2. Lifekeeper would control the following resources on North 1. It was the shared one IP address that the users actually connected to. There were two file systems, shared one and shared two. We were only exporting data off of the shared one file system and the shared one resource. And this would be data that both the students and staff would share. In the lower grades, it was applications that the students would run off of their network share. And in the high schools, it was assignments and different, office documentation that the staff would pass to students. The Samba NMBD and SMBD processes that were controlled by Lifekeeper only bound to that shared one IP address, so the students didn't know about the North 1 IP address. So the North 2 box is the same, other than but it just had the home directories of the users that were in the North, and the teachers' home directories in the North. Again, it had a Home 1 and Home 2 file system controlled by Lifekeeper, but only Home 1 was used normally on the North 2 server. Like in the last example, Winbind was running on all four machines, and they were joined to the domain with the North 1 and North 2 names, and Winbind was not failed over by Lifekeeper. We used Winbind with the ID map LDAP so that when you would fail data between any of the four servers, the ID mappings would be the same. Again, the South Data Center has the same configuration, but has a shared two and a home two resource. So we had an automated process. It was just basically a cron job that kept the Samba configuration files for all four resources in sync on all the file servers. The only thing that really had to change was when we're going from one data center to another, they were on different subnets, so we had to change some IP addresses in the SMB comps during this cron job before we moved the files over. The customer didn't want to pay for the replication abilities in FastT, so what they wanted to do instead was back up the data between the two servers. So say on the North One server, it's only the shared one resource. They wanted to rsync the South data center's shared two file system up to the North daily. So at least, you know, if it failed, they had to back up from tape, restore from tape anyway, they could have a recent backup online on disk to start with. It turned out to be difficult when in our testing with that much data, if you had to start from scratch rsyncing that, you couldn't do it within a reasonable period of time before, say, a student showed up the next day. If you started at midnight, it might not be done. LifeKeeper handled automatically failing over only systems in the same data center for the reason of that the data wasn't always in sync between the two data centers. So the shared one resource could automatically move from North 1 to North 2 if there was a problem with the shared storage on one box or if it hung in the kernel or something. Real quick, I'll just go over the migration procedures we had. The customer wanted to verify the ACLs that they were using on the new servers. They'd been granting access to different groups to change ACLs through the year, so we didn't have to worry about ACL migration. So they started with new directories for each school under the home and shared file systems. They set the ACLs the way they wanted them to be, and then they would mount the Windows server during the week and copy the data over via rsync. Then we had a 4-hour outage window. This is the reason we were using this procedure. We couldn't just use the NetRPC share migrate command because some of these schools we were pulling the data from were on slow networks or slow servers, and in our 4-hour window, we couldn't get everything pulled over. So we had an initial copy. The night of a migration, they would set the ACL on the Windows file server so that no one could get to it. They'd disconnect everyone, and then we'd do a final rsync, bring the new server up, and then update the user's profiles, or their profiles and their login scripts in the domain. And then the next day when they came in, everything should be fine, and they should not notice, and that was successful. Okay, again, the domain migrations, we only had 4-hour windows each night we wanted to do a migration. But we first tried to do the NetRPC Vampire right into an LDAP backend on our server. It would run for hours, and then the NT server would give us an error return, and we never dug into that because it was just taking too long. So the next thing we did was NetRPC into a TDD backend, and that would work. In about 15 minutes, we could do a NetRPC Vampire into TDB in these 20 to 30,000 user domains. The problem would be exporting with PDB edit to export from LDAP from TDB to the LDAP. That would work, but it would take hours, and we were so close to the edge of our window that we were worried that if we ran into a problem, we couldn't back out without extending the window. So finally, we have contacts on the IBM Linux Technology Center. Jim McDonough's team we work with is here, and he provided us a patch so that we could vampire into an LDIF file. It was actually someone else on his team who wrote that.
So what happened? How did it work?
Yep, so what we would do, we didn't have the LDAP server configured out. We had the slapdconf in place. We ran the LDAP patch. We kind of massaged it because we wanted to change some users' names and profiles in that text file. Did a slap add. That would take about 15 minutes per server. We ran that in parallel on both the primary and the replica open LDAP server.
So I'm guessing that
that's right. It wasn't Samba's fault or NT's fault. No, it just that it was taking too long because LDAP was too slow doing updates when it was online. Even when I would turn off, you know, I would turn off checkpointing and set, you know, the size of the cache huge and all that, it still couldn't complete fast enough for our migration. So as I said, the final procedure, we were up in under 20 minutes in the migration with these large domains. And then it was just to basically, you know, you shut down the Windows VDCs and PDCs, we'd start LDAP Samba, and then join the box to itself so we could start WinBind, and then we'd have to reestablish the trust because those past trust passwords are not pulled over by a vampire. So So going back, before we did these migrations, we realized we were probably going to have some performance problems because of the number of users they wanted to put on each of these file servers. So we started in a test lab at IBM. The first thing we wanted to do was just pull a copy of the customer's environment. We pulled LDIF files. We got copies of their data. We brought them to the IBM lab and just built the setup as it was going to be with no real load, no users. We had problems to begin with, just even trying to map drives to it. Actually, it would work fine, and then we'd have an intermittent problem. We had LDAP SAM trusted equals yes, so that even with that, getting the membership list of domain users with 30,000 users in it would take 2 minutes. And normally that doesn't happen when you're just mapping a drive to a server. But then an admin would get on there, and he would do ls-l in some directory. He'd get looked up. WinBind lookups would block until that was completed. And I've tested in even 3022, it's still that way. It was different then, but now there's, you know, one WinBind process to handle per domain. And whether he's doing a lookup into the domain or into cache, he can only do one of those at a time. And so I talked to Volker and Jerry, and they might be able to help us out with that. But at the time, we couldn't work around that. The way the schools organized their groups was also a problem. They had two groups for each school, a staff group and a users group. In some of the large secondary schools, that would be 4,000 users. And even that, if it takes 10 seconds, you can't block other requests during that time. So workarounds we thought, maybe we can avoid looking up these large groups, because normally accessing the file system and checking the access control doesn't cause that lookup to happen. So first thing we thought, let's make sure the owning group of all these files is not a domain group, so that when some admin who we haven't taught yet doesn't do ls-l down some huge tree and just kill our server. We ended up doing that, although we decided it wasn't a good enough workaround because they wanted to have quotas by school. And so we set a group, each school's directory would have the same owning group, and then we'd set the sticky bit, and then we could enforce quotas on a school by school basis. We also looked at putting users in different default groups than domain users, so we wouldn't have that huge group. But still, with on the ACLs, the admins needed to be able to get FACL and set FACL. And we couldn't move that to off shift. If they wanted, we were afraid that we'd hit an outage, so we went away from that. Then the next thing we thought about looking to do was eliminate WinBind from NS Switch and build local password and group files. The customer didn't like that idea. They didn't want to maintain the scripts. And also, we were worried with. The LDAP directory? That was another option that I put later. The problem was the trusted domains in this case, and the way it was designed and architected. We couldn't change the architecture. It's easy to do that against one LDAP server. But then we'd have WinBind trusted domains only equals yes. And for the trusted domains, they were just as big, and we'd have the same problem. So that was the reason we thought we could build all of the groups from all domains and name them correctly and get a script to put them on all those users on each box. But we didn't have access to some of the Windows AD domains. And so say we could probably get an ID on them and query the membership lists. But then say they renamed an account, we wouldn't know it was a rename and not a delete and an add. So it was not going to work. So we went with a workaround of increasing the WinBind cache time to 1 day. And then every night they'd restart WinBind, prime the, there's domain users, and there were like 10 high schools. We had to prime all those groups in cache. Okay, next phase of testing. So we got around that, and basic operation was working. Now we wanted to load test it. The customer said they needed 12,000 concurrent active clients on one box, in the worst case, because you're split between two data centers, and they say they have 6,000 users in the north connected at a time and 6,000 in the south. Well, they both connect to the shared resource, and they both connect to the home resource. So you've got 6,000 concurrent connections on each box. If you fail between data centers, then you've got 12. So we didn't have any way to simulate load from the Windows boxes in our lab. So we built Linux boxes as test clients and used a distributed shell to kick off shell scripts we wrote that forked different tests. We tested the domain controllers first, and we're very pleased with the results. We used the SMB Torture suite from Sound before, and there was an XP login test. I'm not sure who wrote that, another vocal did that one. He was having the same issues as another customer earlier, and he had written this test. We got 20,000 domain logins over 13 minutes. And since they only had probably 15,000 XP boxes that were joined to the domain, the rest were not even domain accounts, and they'd be connected only to the file server. We thought this was more than they would see. You know, they wanted this over 30 minutes with 12,000. We beat that by quite a bit. The problem ended up being connecting to the file server. It was a bottlenecks in WinBind. We did a very simple expect script with SMB client to get and put different sizes of files, 100K up to a few megabytes, and then we would sleep so long between, and we might have, you know, hundreds of these forked on each of our 20 different Linux test boxes. We would have intermittent problems with logins, SMB client failing, and it turned out the way WinBind was cleaning up connections, there was a race condition. It would start the cleanup of a WinBind connection when it hit 200 connections, say. But a write would come in on the pipe before it knew, and it would close the pipe, and then the client lookup would fail, and then we'd get some error in our Samba log. We ended up working around that by putting retries in the client, and then a switch WinBind client, and that was Bugzilla 2736. Another thing that worked for us was to increase the number of client connections, but we didn't want to have to recompile to change that, and we didn't push to get it a configurable option. Another one that would be nice is a TDB hash bucket size, like you have for the locking database. If you would make that for the WinBind as well, that's another area we ran into problems I'll get into. We had increased the size of the XT3 journal, and we also ran into swapping when we get all 12,000 connections in a box, and we upgraded the memory to 16 gig, and that took care of it. Okay, so after these workarounds, the solution did go production in August of 2005. Now, the customer did most of the file server migration work. We provided them the tools and support, and they did that over the summer. I actually did the domain migrations for them in a week in at the end of July. It went down. School started fine. They called IBM support in October, or in the end of September, with boxes were just going down. They would try to log into a box and the login would even hang for minutes. It turned out WinBind was CPU bound. The problem was that they had added valid users lines to their home shares to keep users from one the south going to the north when they didn't want them to. And instead of using ACLs like they should have, they put domain users for one of the domains in the valid users line. And that even worked for a while with everything in cache. But then they moved users' home directories from one box to another as the students moved from north to south schools. If they were logged into an XP client, it would retry every few seconds. And so after they moved a few home directories one day, they just destroyed the server where the home directory used to be, because there was inefficiencies in the way that WinBind was pulling those SIDs out of the cache. Again, we worked with IBM LTC, and they provided some improvements in WinBind efficiency pulling entries out of cache, and that made it into Samba 3022. I think we patched 3021 to get that, but I'm pretty sure 3022 has that fix, or maybe one of the point releases in 3021. But even with that fix, they still couldn't leave that in there. They still could have brought the box down doing that many lookups. So basically we said tell them not to do that anymore. So the lessons that we learned, we weren't able to change the architecture in the solution when we got in to do the implementation, unfortunately. But we did learn a lot about how it would have been better to do. Having three large trusted domains is a hard thing to work around. If we had been able to consolidate into one domain, then we probably could have pointed it right at LDAP, as the suggestion was, for the users and groups. And that would have, we might not have liked that going over the network, but we could have probably made these four boxes open LDAP replicas themselves, and then pointed right at our own, each file server pointed at itself, to keep the network traffic down. And then, of course, to do that, we'd need win by entrusted domains only equals yes. Now, that wouldn't have worked if we had large trusted AD domains, but in this case, they did not. So we could have been lucky and taken advantage of that. Again, the domain controllers handle the load really well in our testing, so we weren't worried about adding, you know, having 70 or if they grew to 100,000 users in the school district. I think it would have handled it as long as we kept the size of individual groups down. And then we would have been able to increase the number of file servers to spread the load on the Winbind even better. And if we'd only had, say, 3 or 4 domain controllers and then added 2 more file servers, that, you know, we could have spread the load across 3 servers in each. You could have, with Lifekeeper, you could fail between 3 different boxes, and we'd have 2 resources, or could have had 3 resources, say, across the 3 boxes. We could have split home directories in half and shared directories in half between those 3 boxes. And I guess that's the end. If anyone has any questions, that's my email address. Over now. Oh, the microphone. So the question was if we considered any active-active or clustered file systems with an active-active. Now, this was architected before I was there, although I would be a little worried about, in their testing so far with this many users on a clustered file system, if you get too many accesses to the same file, we run into problems. So I'm not sure if it's worth the performance hit for this environment.
Well, it would allow you to split off the Winbind processes on several servers.
And I think we can do that. There was no totally unactive box in this case. So say we had the shared one resource on the north one server and home one on the other server. That was bad design because you didn't split any users between those 2 boxes. But we could have taken half the home directories and half the shared spaces and put them on 1 box and split them up the other way. We weren't allowed to change that architecture. But that would have also split the load without having a clustered file system.
Do you expect to follow up on this customer, where he's going to go, and like what problems they will face next year?
Well, they wanted to run it themselves, so it's not a strategic outsourcing. So it's totally up to the customer if they want to continue to with this direction. I think they were looking at Novell integrate. They wanted to go to a Novell LDAP backend, and so I know that was their next project, and I haven't heard how that was going. So they did want to consolidate the domains, but they did not want us to do it. So that, because they'd already contracted with Novell to do that.
Sorry. All right. No more questions. So thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We now have 1 hour break for lunch, and we'll continue at 1.